Hello, and welcome to Eyes on Success, a weekly program of information on the ever-changing world of accessibility. Now here are the hosts of this program, Nancy Goodman-Torpy and Peter Torpy.
Hello, I'm Nancy.
And I'm Pete. Well, just try to imagine traveling around the world alone for months at a time, and you're blind and partially deaf.
We'll speak with Tony Giles, who has done exactly that multiple times. We'll learn how he prepares for and manages his trips, and also talk with him about some of the adventures he recounts in his new book, Seeing the Americas My Way. But first, for our tip of the week, this week's tip comes from Tony Giles.
Think positive and do something you enjoy.
Boy, isn't that great advice? You know, I always tell people that I always had a great job because I enjoyed doing physics. Well, you know, what's better than having a job that you enjoy? And Tony does exactly that. He enjoys traveling, and we'll see how he enjoys his life with some of those adventures.
And also how he enjoys sharing it with others through his blog, through books he's written, through interviews he's given. And you'll see just how much joy it's possible to get out of traveling, even if you thought your traveling days were over when you lost your vision. Let's start by meeting Tony and learning about what he does when he's neither traveling nor writing about it.
Well, Tony, it's good to have you back again. You've been on our show several years ago, and we figured we'd talk to you again about some of your stories and about the book that you're publishing about some of your experiences. But for our listeners who don't remember you, can you introduce yourself and let us know who you are?
Sure, yeah. My name's Tony Giles. I'm 37 years old, almost 38. I'm from Southwest England, and at present I live in a small seaside town called Teignmouth, sort of near Cornwall on the southwest coast of England. And I'm totally blind. I got light sensitivity. I can sense sunlight, but no house lights or shades. And I'm 80% deaf in both ears without my hearing aids.
Pete mentioned that Tony had been on the show before, and that was in episode 1319, in which he talked about his travels as well as his first book. We're conducting this interview using Skype and just speech. I assume your hearing aids correct your hearing to a point where you've got almost normal hearing?
Yeah, almost. I got about 80% hearing one-to-one. Probably about 77-78% hearing with Skype with my digital hearing aids. They're very powerful.
So we'll talk to you about your travels in just a bit.
Sure.
But tell us a little bit about what life is like for you in the United Kingdom now. What do you do when you're not traveling around the world?
Yeah, so I spent the last 19-20 years traveling on and off. And I sort of go away for sort of 2-3 months at a time. And when I'm not traveling, I'm sort of working on books. I published my first autobiographical travels in 2010 as a print and ebook, and then been working on other books, and this is the latest project. And then planning next travels. I go to Greece a lot because my girlfriend is from Greece. She's also blind, so I go and spend time with her while she comes here, and we do trips. We went to Ireland for a week in July. And I go up and see other friends in other parts of England, get on the bus or take the train and see friends up in the northeast or in London. I go and spend time with my mum and my stepdad. They live about 70, 80 miles away from where I live. So yeah, I keep busy. I listen to lots of music, rock music. I like to read and listen to audio books on Daisy format. So, yeah, that's what I spend my time.
Sounds like fun.
Yeah, it's a good life. I'm very lucky.
You are listening to Eyes on Success. 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 Success.
This week's focus topic is Tony's new book about some of the adventures he's had while traveling alone as a totally blind and mostly deaf man through North and South America.
People may remember some of the stories you told about your travels in the last interview we did with you several years ago.
Uh-huh.
But I recently read through the draft of your new book, and you describe a lot of your adventures in a lot more detail. And this was like an eight-month travel, is that right?
Yeah, it was about 8 months in 2004, starting in South America, and sort of spent sort of 3 months there, sort of wandering through Brazil and Argentina, and then spent the rest of my time in sort of North America, the U.S., Canada, Mexico, and even Cuba eventually.
You certainly hit all the hot spots in a little time up in Alaska also.
Yeah, it's a little cooler there in Alaska, which I managed to get to eventually. Yeah, most of the places I visited were pretty hot.
So before we get into the details of the book and some of your adventures covered in it, can you tell our listeners what the name of the book is? And then towards the end of the episode, we'll discuss how they can get a copy once they've gotten excited about it.
Sure. So this book's called Seeing the Americas My Way by Tony Giles.
And it certainly is a very different way of seeing things. Now, people should know you travel totally alone, right?
Yeah, I travel independently. So that means I book all my flights and stuff and accommodation by myself or with help of friends. But I actually physically travel by myself. And then I'm using airport assistance and assistance with buses and trains. But yeah, I'm actually traveling by myself and meeting other people who help me out along the way.
And as far as I can understand from reading the book, you navigate with a cane and you carry everything on your back that you're going to need for the 8 months. Is that right?
That's correct. Yeah. So I travel with a smallish backpack and a long cane, long white cane. And I usually take a spare cane with me and two or three tips so I can change the tips when they get worn.
That's a good idea. I've been traveling and accidentally broken canes, and then you wind up, now what are you going to do? So it's good to have a backup.
Yeah, I actually describe an event in my book, and I was in Canada, and one of the end of my cane got ran over, and I was able to get a taxi back to my accommodation and get a spare cane, so I was lucky.
I'm sure many blind people have had the experience of flying into an airport, and then you get sighted assistance getting from the airplane to the exit of the airport. And then the airport personnel, well, they've reached the end of their domain. What do you do next? Just in a typical city, you've flown in, you've landed at the airport, and you're all alone.
So before I travel, I try and do as much research as possible using my speech software to find out how to get from the airport into the downtown area of that particular city, or how to get to my accommodation. And then I look at what options I have. Do I have buses? Do I have a subway? Can I walk and count blocks? Or do I need to take a taxi? So I try to have as much information on me before I land in a particular destination I've never been to before.
So you work out a lot of the trip ahead of time, I take it, in terms of where you're going to stay. You often stay in youth hostels, so you know where they are.
Yeah.
And you must make a lot of your reservations online ahead of time, so that's all taken care of. Is that right?
I certainly try to, particularly in the Western world, Europe, the US, Canada, Australia. It's more difficult in Africa and Asia. It can be. There's less internet access at times.
But now one of the issues that I would think is that when you're home, you have your computers and speech synthesizers and internet and access software. When you're on the road, you don't have access to all of that. How does that work out?
So I tend to, especially in the olden days, I tend to rely on using computers in hostels or going into libraries and getting people to help me use computers.
So in other words, you'll let someone else be your eyes because these may not have a speech synthesizer or screen reader on the computer.
Yeah, that is starting to change. I have a laptop now, which I'm using here. So I'm now taking that to places I consider reasonably safe, like Europe, the US, Australia.
Mm-hmm.
But again, I wouldn't take it to Africa or Asia.
Mm-hmm.
there's a good chance it would be stolen or lost.
The other thing you seem to be quite intrepid about is traveling around with your cane just through unknown city streets in new cities and new environments. You'll ask people, you know, where's the beach? And they'll say it's 7 blocks that way and 2 blocks to the east. And you seem to have no problem just wandering around. And even if you get lost, just taking your time getting back and asking questions.
Yeah, that's the confidence I've gained from spending time at a school for the blind and traveling when I was younger. I've built up all that confidence over the years. And, you know, I feel when I'm talking to someone, I can trust them or not. And, you know, I'm confident enough to ask. And you've got to be able to ask questions all the time when you're traveling, because otherwise you won't get anywhere. You won't get any information.
So in general, what you're saying then is you have some technology that you rely on yourself, but mostly you're relying on kindness of other people to sort of help you out, make these reservations, help you logistically get around. And people seem to do that pretty readily from reading your book.
Yeah. So basically I rely on a combination of technology as it's improving and getting better, and the kindness and generosity of the public.
Is it an issue to find people to do these things for you? Because it sounds like some of them go a fair amount out of their way in terms of being accommodating. And I'm, you know, kind of surprised that, you know, people are willing to do that. Do you find that difficult to find people willing to do that? Or it just sort of happens? They volunteer? Or do you have to search a little?
It varies from country to country, obviously, and culture to culture.
So this book that you just wrote describes your travels through North and South America, and in the entire hemisphere, there are only a handful of official languages, English, French, Spanish, and Portuguese. But you've been to many other countries with many other official languages. Do you speak any languages in addition to English?
I speak a tiny bit of Spanish, which I was learning as I was traveling around South America, and a tiny little bit of Greek, because my girlfriend's from Greece, and schoolboy French, which is very basic.
So basically, you speak enough of those languages so that you could ask somebody where the bus station is, or ask if they speak English, or maybe a couple other things.
Yeah. Do they speak English? Where's the nearest toilet, etc.? Mm-hmm. Food, water, they're the most important things. Thank you.
Oh, thank you is usually a big help.
Yeah.
It had to be particularly challenging when you first started out through South America because, as you pointed out, you were kind of learning language as you went along. And I would guess, particularly being blind, you know, a lot of people, if they don't speak another language, they can sort of wave their hands and make gestures to help people understand. How difficult was that to work out?
Difficult, very frustrating, particularly in Brazil, because I didn't really learn any Portuguese apart from hello and thank you. Often I had to ask staff members in the accommodation to write down the places I wanted to get to or the bus numbers in Portuguese, and I would just show people. And I would find, and I always find this in an airport, especially if I just stand there with my cane and sort of look a little bit lost or confused, people will sort of gravitate towards you and ask or touch your arm and just say, do you want help? And I was able to just show the piece of paper to them, and sort of 8-9 times out of 10, they would help me or take me to someone who would speak a little bit of English. So frustrating, but manageable. And the good thing is that if you're traveling in places and areas where there are tourists, of course, like say New York City or Rio de Janeiro, the chances of finding someone who will speak some English and or Portuguese is greater than if you're going to, say, somewhere like Armenia or somewhere more obscure, if that makes sense.
Your book in general is very positive, and you talk about very positive experiences where sometimes you have minor difficulties and they work out and it's almost kind of funny. But I was wondering, there must be times when it's frustrating and you really feel like you're stranded, or have you ever felt that you were just totally lost and, oh my word, this might be the end?
Yeah, a couple of times in my book when I talk about one experience in Savannah, Georgia, and the owner of the hostel wouldn't allow me to stay because he decided either it was too dangerous or he didn't want to have the responsibility of a blind person staying in his accommodation for whatever reason. And that was a shock. That was a surprise. He's basically shut the door in my face. and I couldn't find any other real accommodation at short notice within my sort of budget. So I spent the night sleeping in the bus station. That was tough. I did sort of contemplate whether I should go home or maybe travel to a different country or something. Yeah.
Did anybody bother you when you were spending the night at the station? Either the police or the other people?
No, I was pretty lucky. I guess the part of the bus station I've been was relatively quiet. The staff knew I was there, so I guess they probably kept an eye on me. But I know Greyhound bus stations can be a dangerous place. I was pretty lucky. And I also remember waking up sort of 8, 9 o'clock in the morning, and someone actually offered me some food, which was quite amazing.
Well, it also sounds like from your travels, you spent many nights sleeping on buses because you've taken bus rides that went for 3, 4, or 5 days at a clip.
Yeah, I would try and get a couple of seats and recline them and sort of sleep across them if I could. And that would save me accommodation, obviously. And back then, I was able to get a Greyhound bus pass for 3 months and travel where I wanted. Unfortunately, they've stopped them now.
Oh, that used to be a nice feature. I remember they used to have those things. You could just ride as many buses as you wanted for some number of months and go anyplace, right?
That's right. Yeah, really good. Yeah.
They don't do that anymore, huh?
No, they stopped them.
Well, you'll have to change how you travel then next time, huh?
Yes. I guess maybe trains would be an option. I don't know.
The train tends to be very expensive, at least in this country.
And it's limited as well, isn't it? You can't go to every state by train in the US, I hear.
You mostly talk about staying in youth hostels when you travel, because these tend to be relatively inexpensive. Can you tell people what those are like, what the accommodations are like, and the physical setups?
Yeah, sure. I mean, they vary from hostel to hostel, city to city. But in general, it's shared rooms of 4 to 6, 8 bunk beds, i.e. one bed on top of another, and you climb up to the top bunk via a wooden or metal ladder. And it's strangers, so when you go there, you don't know who'll be sharing a room with. Some hostels will be male-only rooms and female-only rooms, and other hostels will be mixed. Some rooms will have toilet and shower in them, but usually the toilets and showers are separate. You have to walk down a corridor to use the facilities. They're usually cheap accommodation. So you just pay for a bed and you get your sheets included. Some places you'll have a towel, but most places they won't give you a towel. Sometimes you'll have breakfast included in some places you want. But it's just a great way of having a bed for a cheap price and meeting different people from all over the world.
So I guess that works out pretty well, because at these hostels, you're meeting with similarly adventuresome people, and they must be willing and eager to meet other people in unusual circumstances, and that must be quite a friendly environment.
Yeah, that's the idea behind it. Yeah, most people are staying in hostels because they're traveling, you know, usually for 1 or 2 nights. They're usually traveling for a week or longer. So yeah, most people don't know the city or where they are, so everyone's sort of in a similar situation. And yeah, you tend to meet people and talk with each other and find out people's backgrounds, where they come from, and you often end up, you know, having a meal together or going for a drink together or even doing a day trip or something together.
We've spoken with other people who tend to travel in youth hostels, and they said often you'll wind up with this group of people, and each one speaks maybe 2 or 3 languages, but they don't all speak the same language. So you'll wind up with the first person translating from English to Swedish, and then that person from Swedish to Spanish. And by the time you get around the table, everybody's understood what everybody said.
That's right. Yeah, it's great fun. It's great camaraderie.
The other thing I find hard to imagine is traveling with 8 months worth of my stuff on my back. I mean, when we travel, we take a couple of suitcases. Sometimes we ship an extra box ahead of us to get there in town when we arrive. But what do you take on your back? What do you consider most important? What's in your backpack?
Well, a spare cane and spare tips. Also, spare hearing aid parts and spare batteries. They're the most important things. And then a money belt so I can put passport and money under my clothing. So it's people don't see it and it's safer. And the usual clothes, depending on what weather I'm traveling in. And on this trip I wrote about, I was mainly traveling in warm weather. So it was shorts, t-shirts, a light raincoat, etc. Also, I traveled with a sleeping bag and a tent at one point because I was camping as well. So yeah, these are the sort of main things.
This is probably a bigger backpack than the little day pack that we bring on the airplane as a personal item.
Yeah, it would probably be a 2-foot backpack, maybe a foot and a half now. I'm sort of getting smaller as I get more experience. But yeah, also, as you travel, you can offload things and buy new things. So I wouldn't take everything I own traveling for 8 months because it's obviously you've got to carry the weight.
So when you wear out one pair of sneakers, you just buy a new pair of sneakers and throw out the old ones.
Yeah, go to the markets and find cheap places, especially things like sandals or flip-flops, as we call them.
The last time we spoke with you, you told a couple of very memorable stories, like the time you inadvertently crossed the border into a country in Africa that was having a coup, and everybody asked, well, how'd you get here? And the time when you were camping in the Yukon and somebody stole all your medical supplies.
Yeah.
Are there any particularly memorable stories that you'd like to share with our listeners that are covered in the book? I mean, you don't want to divulge the whole book, but just to whet their appetites.
Yeah, certainly the story I told about camping in the Yukon is in this book, so people will be able to read more about the actual outcome and what happened. And I say I told a story about being in Savannah, and I'd rung up the hostel the day before to book it, and the guy said, "No, just turn up, you'll be fine." And when I got there, standing on the porch and about to enter, and the man I took to be the owner, basically, he said, "You can't stay, it's not suitable." He actually said, "There are other places for people like you," before he slammed the door in my face. That was a shock.
Well, that's completely outrageous, and I'm glad to know that that was an isolated experience and that most of our countrymen treated you better than that. Do you have any other stories you want to share?
Oh, yeah, there's this story. When I was in Brazil, and I walked into the accommodation and sort of met the staff, and they sort of didn't speak great English, but they sort of showed me around, showed me to a room, and I got settled and then went out to sort of relax in the courtyard and stuff. And 10 minutes later or so, I was propositioned by a prostitute. And so I thought, right, what do I do here? Because it was getting late. I thought, well, I can't really sort of leave now and try and find an accommodation getting dark. So I sort of said, well, no thanks, very nice, but I'm not interested. And they kept sort of pushing this girl onto me and sort of reducing the price. And I said, no thanks. I went to bed. The next morning, someone I'd actually met in the hostel said, come on, we'll get out of here, we'll find some accommodation. So no, I never actually got to experience any of Fortaleza.
But you got a good story out of it.
Yeah.
Now for this week's final item, how to get Tony's book and other of Tony's writings, as well as some resources to help you plan your adventures.
So remind us again what the name of your book is and tell us where people can find it.
It's called Seeing the Americas My Way by Tony Giles, and it's available as an ebook only at the moment, and it's available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, also available in other ebook formats. I should also say that it's also information where to get the ebook is also available on my website, www.tonythetraveler.com. Traveler is spelt with two L's.
And what else can people find on your website?
On my website, they can find photos of most of my trips, also blogs. I'm blogging as I travel these days. And I'll certainly be blogging about my my next trip in Australia and New Zealand, usually every sort of 10 days or so. Also videos, articles, and interviews. So that's mainly what's on my blog.
Do you have a social media presence?
And I also have a Facebook page. This is Tony Giles 4, and also a Facebook page called Tony the Traveller. And I blog and on my Facebook as well as my website. And there'll be information about published ebook on Facebook as well.
What websites do you recommend for people who are looking for inexpensive places to stay?
Couchsurfing is www.couchsurfing.com. Couchsurfing, all one word. And for hosteling, there is www.hostels.com or www.hostelbookers.com or www.hostelworld.com. Also, if you just do a general Google search on hostels in the place you're going to, these websites usually come up as the first two or three options.
Do you have any advice for our listeners who might be new to traveling?
Firstly, think of a place you'd like to go that is reasonably accessible within your own city, your own state, and then try and find someone like-minded who might want to travel with you and maybe have the time a day or a weekend and try that experience and go from there. And if you enjoy it again, maybe do another similar trip and build up your confidence. And maybe if you don't have anyone, your family or friends who could travel with you, maybe try looking on the internet for like-minded people in your city, town, area that might be interested in traveling with you, say, for a day, a weekend. That would be a starting point. Build up your confidence and go from there.
Well, if you're looking for any of those resources or want to get a hold of Tony's book, just go to our show notes for this episode at www.eyesonsuccess.net, and all of that information will be included there.
That's it for show number 1643. Next week on Eyes on Success, we'll be talking about identification of paper currency. We'll speak with Leonard Oliar, director of the Bureau of Engraving and Printing, about current features that make U.S. currency easier for visually impaired people to identify it, as well as their plans to make that easier still. And we will also discuss their smartphone app and free hardware device that can identify currency for you. If you have any questions regarding something you've heard about on the show, or you'd like to share an idea for a future show, send an email to hosts@eyesonsuccess.net or call us at 585-210-8094.
You've been listening to Eyes on Success, hosted and produced by Nancy Goodman Torpey and Peter Torpey, and distributed by WXXI Reach Out Radio. Browse the full archive of programs, find instructions for subscribing to the podcasts, and much more at www.eyesonsuccess.net. You can also find us on iTunes, follow us on Facebook and on audioboom.com at Eyes on Success, or Twitter at @_EyesOnSuccess. We hope you will join us again next week for more information and updates on products for accessible living. Thanks for listening to Eyes on Success, and have a nice day.